Your film is now ready to be shown.
Good morning. I'm Justin Hendricks, editor of Tech Policy Press, a nonprofit media venture intended to provoke new ideas, debate, and discussion at the intersection of technology and democracy. This year, Tech Policy Press is hosting 9 reporting fellows. These individuals, who are located around the world, from India to Spain to Brazil and to the US and beyond, bring a variety of experiences and expertise to their work. One of those fellows is Anika Collier-Navaroli. Anika is an award-winning writer, lawyer, and researcher focused on the intersections of technology, media, policy, and human rights. She's currently a senior fellow at the Tau Center for Digital Journalism at Columbia University and the McGurn Senior Fellow for Media Integrity at the Consortium on Trust in Media and Technology at the University of Florida. For the past decade, her work has spanned from law firms and think tanks to advocacy organizations in senior policy positions at Twitter and Twitch. Notably, Anika testified as a whistleblower to the United States House Select Committee to investigate the January 6th attack on the Capitol, where she shared crucial details of what took place inside the company as its management determined how to address extremism and incitement to violence. For her fellowship, Anika is conducting a series of discussions like the one you'll hear today that are intended to help us imagine possible futures for tech and tech policy, for democracy, and for society beyond the moment we're in. Here's Anika to introduce the second episode in the series, which she's dubbed Through to Thriving.
Welcome, y'all, to the special series of podcast conversations where we are talking about what we can do and what we can put our focus and energy into right now that can get us through this moment and into a place of a thriving, better future. I am Anika Collier-Navaroli, your host and a Tech Policy Press fellow. And I'm laying out these steps along this pathway from through to thriving by talking to some really amazing tech policy folks. Today, we have with us one of my longtime colleagues and my friend, Dr. Desmond Upton Patton. And we are going to be talking about a journey to joy. So, Desmond, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Anika. Good to be here.
It's so good to have you with us. Would you mind introducing yourself for any of our listeners who may not know about your amazing work?
I'm Desmond Patton. I am the Brian and Randy Schwartz University Professor at the University of Pennsylvania. I have appointments in social policy, communications, and psychiatry. I'm also a board member of Tech Policy Press, and so I'm super excited to be doing this. For over a decade, I've studied the role and impact of social media on gun and gang violence and grief and loss. And most recently, I've been focused on joy. This has been kind of a really cool and amazing shift in my work, both professionally and personally. I am teaching about it, I'm researching about it, and writing about it. So I'm super excited to talk with you about it today.
I'm really excited to talk with you about this. I have been watching your journey from afar, which has, in fact, I'm sure not just me, but inspired a joy journey for so many of us along this path. I appreciate that. But let's talk a little bit about, you said you've been researching and teaching about joy. How did you start on this journey? How did you get to this place?
You know, this really happened accidentally. I think a couple of things started to happen. One, I think the important thing to know is that my career has been spent looking at the deepest, darkest, hardest parts.
Right. Right. Exactly. So this is a shift, right?
And it's important work, and it's been pathbreaking work for me. It is the work that got me tenure. And I think in the midst of doing that work, joy was always there, but I couldn't see it. You know, when you're trained in social science and injury science, you're trained to look at problems oftentimes from a deficit perspective, and sometimes it's really hard to see anything else. But one of the things that was happening in my research that I was getting to a place of being able to see differently was that young people were using joy as a way of de-escalating violence. They would use humor, funny memes, anything to get their friend calmed down or to de-escalate. And we see this happen outside of a gun violence context. Mm-hmm. Folks will observe a pattern happening and they'll interject. And so that was happening in my research. And then my friend Andre Brock.
Yes, shout out to Andre.
And Andre, who has long studied Black Twitter, has always noticed the ways in which Black folks use joy on social media. And so his research and his writing has always been in the back of my mind. But I think I saw a post from him about Black Twitter and Black joy that really shook me, because it coalesced with this finding that I was seeing in my research. I feel like it was divine intervention, because it was like, ding, 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 like you need to be paying attention to this. And so I owe so much to him for being someone that can see us and understand us and kind of see our potential and capacity in things that we're already doing in our future as well. So that was happening.
You said there was a post that shook you. Do you remember what the post was?
I don't remember exactly what it said, but I remember there being a Twitter post and him talking about, I think, and it probably coalesced around some big traumatic event that was happening in the world. Mm-hmm. Instead of talking about the pain and trauma of that event, he was underscoring for us that we have joy, we know joy, we see joy, we are joy. And he didn't say it like that, but that's what I took from it. And so that was a pivotal moment in me to think about my work. And so those two things happened. And I was like, okay, I got to do something differently. And so the first thing that happened was this idea of teaching this course. I was like, okay, this isn't a topic that I study, but I can study it alongside.
You're a researcher and you're a teacher. You know how to do this.
Right? So I did it. So we did it together. So I started to teach this course at Penn called Journey to Joy. And I didn't know what I was doing. I just knew that I wanted to teach this class. And so, like most of my work, I just started. And from the work, I also began to think, okay, maybe I should think about this finding that I had around joy and figure out how to amplify that. And so the course then led to a research project that was funded by Microsoft to build a platform that helps young folks of color find joy on social media. We can talk more about that later, but
oh yes,
those things came together. And also in a time in my life where I was realizing that I just needed more joy, and that I had been experiencing life through happiness, like these fleeting moments, always chasing happiness, and it never felt sustaining. So getting tenure, you know, becoming a full professor, like all of these success events didn't feel like anything. Mm-hmm. And I got exhausting, because I'm like, what am I doing then? Like, you get the next thing, it doesn't matter. You get the next thing, it doesn't matter. So I wanted to change that. So that's the short story.
Well, okay, we're going to dig into so much, so much of that. But I want to go back to old Twitter, Black Twitter, and what that used to be like. Because I think it's so hard for us, I think, it's to reimagine what used to be. And I will say, when I used to work at Twitter, one of my favorite timelines that I ever had in life was on my work device. I had a separate device for work from my personal device, as everybody working in the industry should make sure that they definitely do. And on that device that was logged into my admin account, the only thing that I followed was Black Twitter and jokes. It was my favorite timeline of all time, right? Yeah. It was just literally just like shits and giggles, really. Yeah. Like, just, and that is something that I will say I miss. I really miss.
I'm with you. And I think, you know, it took me, I'm no longer on Twitter as many people, but it took me a really long time to get off Twitter. And I think people were like, why are you still on Twitter? Don't you know? And I'm like, yes, everything has hit the fan, but it meant something differently for me. It wasn't just this tech thing. Like, I received so much joy and connection and care and fun from that experience that it's like, not quite like a family member, but it's something close to that for me. I had that level of connection to it. And so I couldn't just be like, bye, even though the world was crumbling around it and it was imploding into itself, because those connections were meaningful. And I experienced so much joy from the memes, from the jokes, from the dance videos, from all the things that were shared, especially when life was like hard and were happening and Black folks were just flip the script.
Like, jokes.
All another life. Yeah.
We're going to get these jokes off. Yes. Right. And there was something that was so, so incredibly joyful about that. I know we've been we've been saying the word joy. We've been talking a lot about the word joy. You talked a little bit about how you were searching happiness and how happiness is different than joy. I know you've said joy is personal. You get to define it for yourself. So how do you define joy?
You know, I think of joy now as like this enduring state, this framework that oftentimes grows from pain, from grief. Mm-hmm. And it grows alongside of it. And it can become this window for which you make decisions, how you live your life, how you build relationships. And I think the thing that's really shifted for me is that it's not always Instagrammable. It's not always smiles. It is your soul. It can be your soul, and it can help you to see the world in a different way. And it's not about this chasing of events. It's not about doing joyful events all the time. Mm-hmm. It's about being in a state of joy. And that, for me, is very philosophical. It's care work, it's heart work. And so I think this is why it's complicated, and this is why it can be hard, because so many people try to define joy. You can read it in a textbook and you'll get a million different definitions of joy. But I do think that joy is personal. And I think that it has to be real. It has to be vulnerable. It has to be connected to who you are as a person. And it requires intention and practice. And so my definition is big and all over the place because it's human. And I think joy is humanity.
Wow. Joy is humanity. I'm going to take that with me. You describe joy as this the state of being, this sort of philosophical thing, this intention. And to say, again, I've been following you from afar along this journey. And there was a day that I was playing with one of my nibblings and was having one of them days. And they said to me, "Can you blow these bubbles for me?" And I was like, "Really not going to hurt me a lot to sit here and blow these bubbles, so let me go ahead and do this." And I remember just seeing this sheer, like this elation, right? The like shriek of joy that came out of their voice and their face at the sight of just bubbles flying through the air, right? And I was like, "Oh, that's what Desmond's talking about, right?" Like, it's that thing. Yes. And it literally, it caused me, I was like, you know what? I'm going to stop doing what I'm doing right now. And we're going to blow these. I was over there blowing bubbles till I was like about to pass out. And I was so dizzy. But it was really in that moment of saying, this is the thing that really matters. And really, like, it is the connection of the humanity that so much we get so far away from as adults and so far away from, especially as like tech policy practitioners, that I think is so important to be able to tap into joy in this moment right now, thinking about it, feeling it. It feels really radical, right? Yes. It feels really revolutionary. What has the reaction been to the sort of journey that you've been on from the tech policy community and just generally?
Oh, so good. Oh my God.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's so wonderful. It wasn't what I was expecting and it wasn't my goal. Like I didn't start posting because I was hoping that people would see me as this joyful person. I was really posting for myself. I was posting because I'm reading, I'm doing these reflections, and I'm having a really hard time. And I knew that I needed to shift and to change. I was like, and then I started reading the Let Them book. And that really helped me to be like, I'm going to post anyway. I don't care what people think.
What book is this?
The Let Them Theory, Mel Robbins book. And it gave me the courage to post without worrying about how people are going to respond. Because I normally don't post like that. What's been so interesting, and it's funny because I was saying this in my commencement speech yesterday at Columbia School of Social Work, that people now associate me with joy. And they're not talking to me about my research on gun violence and AI. They're talking to me about joy, and I love it.
How does that make you feel?
It makes me feel wonderful because I have shifted my identity. Like, I've shifted, and it's positive. And people want to process joy with me. They want to share joy with me. People like are emailing me articles that they read in the New York Times about joy. They're looking for joy in unexpected places, and they want to process it with me. Everything has been now focused on joy. I have shifted my life just by being intentional, being reflexive, and also being vulnerable. And I was like, damn, if we could all do this, like, this is cool. And so that's been the beauty of this. And now I haven't abandoned my work on gun violence because
you're writing a book, right?
There's a book about it. It's a public health crisis. But I think that the reality of this human experience is that there's multiple truths, and that the reason why we have cognition is that we can hold multiple truths. We can hold multiple complexities. And this is, I think, where joy and pain is situated.
The shifting of identities, right, is something that is amazing to think about and to hear about. And you mentioned this a little bit. I think so much of tech policy work and so much of the work that we end up doing and the work that you were doing, right, is looking at the worst things that are happening on this planet, that are happening on the internet. And it can be, right, as you've studied, like what it actually does to the brain and to the body and to the folks that are actually doing this work. And I will also say, you see some of the worst things on the internet, but you also see some of the most hilarious things that happen on the internet. So when I was working inside of tech companies, one of my favorite icebreakers that I used to always ask folks working in trust and safety was, what is the most hilarious escalation that you've ever worked on, right?
Yo.
The answers that would come back would literally have folks like sitting there like in stitches, right? Because the things that folks would be seeing every day on the internet were literally, and again, like so traumatic, but there was always that piece of joy. And you say people associate you with joy, kind of interestingly enough, like whenever I would ask that icebreaker, I would always be able to, like, no matter what anybody said, I was always going to be able to top it with my own personal story that I never ever told with a straight face about the day that Chrissy Teigen insulted the president on the platform. And I had to spend my day trying to figure out how many insults were in the phrase pussy ass bitch, right? Like, and now I think one of the like most like pieces of poetic justice of all of the like times that I've talked to Congress, of all serious moments and all of the things that I have done, that clip, right? Like that moment was the thing that so many people come up to me and want to talk about. And right, that was the only time in my entire life I have ever told that story.
Example. And it reminds me of the Montgomery brawl and the folks there. And when I advise tech companies, we've had conversations around like, well, what do we do with those videos? There's harm involved. And there's violence involved, and you have to make the critical decision around what you do with that and take it down and how fast and involved and all those things. And I had to remind them, I said, for a large swath of Black folk, that was a liberating, joyful moment. And we had to go through the history of violence in the South and racism, but then also just like joy as liberation and kind of like this freedom that came out of feeling justified to defend yourself, and how so many Black folks connected to that. And it wasn't the scary thing or this harmful thing. There was harm that was happening, but also brought about a lot of joy and the ability to just like finally stand up for yourself and to see people come together and to do that. And so that's, for some people, that's a hard thing to understand and to manage, that yes, there's violence and harm happening, and there's this justification around it that's connected to histories of injury and racism towards Black folk. And I was like, these are things that you have to contend with as a company. It can't be Black or white. It is deeply nuanced. And I think play allows for a level of nuance that I think is missing in our ability to figure out what's harmful or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's sort of the nuances of content moderation, right? The reality is that so much times we're walking around with a hammer when we really need to be able to have a scalpel to come in and be able to do so much of this work. This also reminds me, I think that was this past week when the plantation caught on fire, right? Another
baby doll.
one of the moments, there's so many of these moments where I'm like, oh, I wish I still had that timeline. That would be the place that I would really love to be able to be in these moments, to be able to experience that little bit of joy. But all right, tell me a little bit about your journey to joy class. How long you've been teaching? You said you started teaching it this semester?
Yeah, I started to teach it 2 years ago. So it's been a graduate level class for folks in communications and social policy. And then we've had people from nursing and computer science to come in. And then this coming year, I'm opening it up to undergraduate students. It'll be the first time that it's taught to undergraduate students. Both classes are full. Okay. And I just have fun. It is by far my favorite class. And the difference is I have designed this class to be joyful, and I want you to experience joy. I don't want you to experience anxiety. I don't want you to experience stress. And so I'm not at all interested in you writing a 20-page paper. I'm not at all interested in you worrying about APA citations. I want you to wrestle with definitions of joy. I want you to understand joy as an individual, as an intersectional person. I want you to think about how joy impacts communities, who deserves joy and who doesn't. I want you to think about how you can build joy with communities. And so the class consists of readings that are not traditional academic readings. There are some, we do talk about the science of joy and we lean into positive psychology in that space. But we also listen to podcasts, we watch documentaries, we're reading all types of materials that wouldn't be deemed academic. And then they have to keep a joy journal, if you will.
Okay.
And you...
Tell me about that.
Yeah, so I give people a set of prompts. And so one prompt is go to an art space.
Oh, wow.
Go for a walk. Experience music. Go to a community event that you've never been to. Go to a comedy show. This is your homework. Your homework is to get the hell out of your house and go do things. And the homework also includes life without your technology tools. So have a day with no cell phone, no social media, and just do things that you think bring you joy. And so what is it like to be without tech? And what is it like to use tech? Identify your favorite influencer. What platform do you like to go to when you're having a bad day and you want to experience fun? So that's a critical part of the class. And then it culminates with them having a joyful community event. And so they identify a community that they feel connected to or part of, and they host a joyful event. Some of the students would host a dinner party. Some of the students would create a joyful card game. Some of them had a book event in their neighborhood. Like, they just were so creative, and they would have to design it. But the critical thing that brings it all together was them designing a joyful life. And so we use UX principles for one day, and they just get a big white card paper, markers and pens, and on the front side of it, they design a life that is personal, and it can be as ambitious as you want it to be or not. And you just draw stick figures, whatever you need, post-its, whatever you want to do. And that's the front end of it. And the back end of it is your professional joy, like how you want to integrate joy either in your academics or in your work or in your schooling or whatever it might be. And then you do some thematic analysis, like what's showing up on both sides? Are there connections between both sides? And this becomes your joy plan. This becomes the entry point for thinking about how you're going to be intentional about planning both personally and professionally based on the things that you already have in your head. But one of the things that I try to push the students to think about, which can be hard, is that oftentimes they start big and it's too complicated. I want to have a six-figure job in 2 years. So that's very Western. That's very, you know, Ivy League. It's all the things that we're told that supposedly joyful. And I want them to like peel that back and think about, no, just think about like if you had nothing.
Yeah.
You had nothing. You had no resources. What would make you feel joyful? And so then they're asked to go smaller, but smaller doesn't mean less than. It doesn't have to be grand. Mm-hmm. So that's essentially the class. We have a dance Zoom guy come in. We do some dancing. They do some ethnography. And so I have them sit at different parts of campus that bring them joy and take notes about what they're seeing, mm-hmm. and what's evidence of joy amongst Penn students. They go for walks in the park. So this is an experiential class. It's not, most people get an A, unless you just don't show up.
Because you can imagine failing a joy class.
Yeah, you would really have to try to fail the joy class. That's a lot of effort. So yeah, that's the class.
What has your students' reactions been, and what is their sort of feedback that you've heard?
I think they're loving it. I hear that oftentimes it's their best class, their most fun class. But I just got an email the other day from a student who graduated, and she was saying how it was helping her to really locate joy in her life. Because I think a lot of this is a really a self-selecting group. And a lot of folks are looking for joy. They want joy, but don't really know what it is and how to find it, or they're struggling to find it. And I think they are beginning to build their own definitions, and they're having agency over their life. I think that's probably the biggest thing, is that joy is now accessible, mm-hmm. and it's for them to define.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So your class sounds amazing. So for those of us who cannot take your class, can you talk us through a little bit? You mentioned a joy plan. What is a joy plan? How do we make one? What are the steps? How can we get involved and get along on this journey to joy?
Yeah, so a joy plan is simple, first and foremost, and it's about you. And I normally talk about at least three things, but I think a joy plan can be whatever you want it to be. But I think these are the three components that I have for my joy plan. One is to have a joy plan that is intentional and honest. Joy doesn't just happen to you. I think you have to be intentional, and I think you have to practice it, and it can be a ritual in your life. But most importantly, you have to be honest with yourself. What actually brings you joy? And when you go there, you actually go there, shit changes. You begin to realize, like, you think you're doing things that bring you joy, but if you're honest with yourself, you will ask yourself, does that really bring me joy? Does going to that lecture bring me joy? Does publishing 100 papers bring me joy? Mm-hmm. That is productive. Mm-hmm. That is deemed success in some people's eyes, but it doesn't always bring you joy. So that's number one. Number two is that it's something that you can do in community. Right. And I think that joy planning is most powerful when it's shared and co-created with other folks. And I think you have to be thoughtful about that, because not everyone is ready to talk about joy. Not everyone is ready to talk about joy. So you have to be really intentional about how you create that space and who is willing to have that exchange with you. And so I do that with my squad from Columbia. We are all on this journey together, and I feel like I have a group of ladies who I can be deeply honest with, and they all know that the end goal is joy. The end goal isn't more money or success. And so I can say, y'all, I got this opportunity. What do you think? And the advice that I get is about, does this bring me joy? Not, oh, that's really prestigious. Wow. It's game changing.
Yeah.
We could all pursue this world and this life of chasing the best, most exciting, beautiful things. But if it doesn't land in your heart and your soul, it does not matter. And you feel that. And so that has been really important. And then lastly, you got to protect that thing, y'all. You have to protect it with your life. And what I've learned is that joy can be the boundaries that you set for yourself. And it's really helping me to shape the decisions that I make. I decided to spend time with you today because I knew talking to you would bring me joy. That was a conscious,
intentional
decision.
Damn.
I knew that it would feel effortlessly. And that's the kind of life I want to live. I don't want to live a life when someone asking me wild questions that are trying to trip me up and it's not free. Like, you know how that goes, right?
Yeah.
I didn't want that, and I knew that wouldn't be the case with you. So I intentionally was like, yes, I will do this. So joy is guiding who I talk to, how I interact, what engagements I do, whether I go on this trip or that trip. And that is freeing. Now, be clear, you also need to wrap all of that in grace, because you'll make mistakes. You will. Sometimes it's hard. I've made mistakes this month. I'm busier than I would like to be this. So I need to go back to my joy plan and make some decisions and make sure to not repeat that in the next few months. So that for me is a joy plan.
Okay. Thank you for explaining that to us. I also realize I should say here for full disclosure, you and I have known each other now for about a decade. I was thinking about it, right? It's been, I think it's been about 10 years since you walked into the offices of Data and Society.
Yeah.
And you have not been able to get rid of me since that moment. And again, I appreciate you being willing to come on and have this conversation, especially about joy, because you are one of the folks who throughout this journey and this tech policy journey that I have been on for the last decade have brought joy to so many spaces and so many of the places that we have been in. And so you were talking about the components of a joy plan, being intentional, being honest. Life happens, right? Mm-hmm. And so while you were in the middle of doing this joy plan, you lost an NSF grant, correct?
Yeah, I lost two.
What was that experience like? And how did this joy plan help you move through that?
Yeah, it sucked. It sucked. And being centered and anchored in joy helps me to understand that this is not the end and that no matter who was in office, this work will continue.
Yeah.
I will continue to work with folks who share my values and we will push through no matter what. So joy can be that thing that brings you back to center because, for 24 hours, I was like, oof, like it hurt. You feel it in part because you have no control over it. These grants weren't taken because we were failing. These grants were taken because we did something wrong. They were taken because we care about Black folks. Mm-hmm. Taken because we care about queer folk. It was taken because we're studying deeply complex emotions that have a connection to inclusion. So that's hard because that's who I am.
Right.
That's what I've built my career doing. And so a part of it is like ripping away, pieces of me.
Mm-hmm.
But joy helped me to recenter. And so a part of what I had to do is this other concept that we talk about called joy stacking. And
tell me about that.
It's been really useful. So joy stacking is really just, it's really you being in touch with you and knowing when you're going to have a rough day. Like you may, sometimes we can look at our calendar
and tell.
It's going to be a little, this week.
Going to be one of those days. Yeah.
One of those days. And that's precisely when you need a joy stack. And what that means is that you book in joyful events, experiences, moments that you filter and structure throughout your day to help you manage and navigate those hard moments. So for example, on the day that I lost those NSF grants, in the morning, I had a really good conversation with a friend that had nothing to do with work, had nothing to do with research. It was just friendship.
Yeah.
Then at the end of the day, I had dinner with one of my MSW classmates that I have not seen in years. Graduated from our MSW program 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And I probably haven't seen her in 5, 6, 7 years. Those bookends really helped me to get through that really hard day. It didn't erase what happened, but it allowed me to get through it. And I think especially as we sit and talk in Mental Health Awareness Month, being able to navigate and take care of our mental health, I think is really important. I think joy can be one of those things that helps you navigate tough days where your mental health is challenged.
Thank you for explaining what joy stacking is. I've been over here taking screenshots of everything that you've been posting. And I'm like, okay, joy stacking, joy journal, you know what I mean? We gonna get this down. And I think one of the things that I just want to call out that you've said a couple of different times is how important friendship and community is, right? And I think that's something that we don't talk enough about in the tech policy space, right?
Yes, 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 100%. And I love that you brought up our Data and Society days. And I think, I don't know if you knew this or understand this, but I came to Data and Society as a new assistant professor at Columbia. I had just moved to New York. And so there was a tremendous amount of fear and anxiety being in this, in the biggest city in the United States, being at an Ivy League institution, being Black in these multiple spaces. And I come into Dance Society, and I believe you're probably one of the few Black folks who were there.
Yes.
You were a beacon of light. I gravitated towards you, ran to you, because I felt like there's some semblance of home here, where someone was brilliant, but also just regular and nice and kind, and wanted to work with me, talk with me, connect with me, grow with me. In my career in tech, that is rare.
Yes.
It's not normative. It is very rare. I maintain those relationships over the years because they have mattered so much to my career. You have opened doors for me. You have created opportunities for me. And that, in part, because there was this joyful light in you that you allowed me to see, that you allow others to see. And I don't know if you do that intentionally, but it was there. And I appreciate it. I've appreciated that. So I just want to give you your kudos for what you do for tech policy, what you do for Black folks in tech policy, and how you share that light, because it's really important.
Thank you, Desmond. I mean, we're talking about joy, and you're going to make me cry.
I don't want to make you cry.
I genuinely appreciate that. Yeah. I really, really do. And I think what I hear you saying is, you know, joy is important, right? And especially in this space for those of us who are dealing and doing tech policy every day, right?
Yes, it is critical. And it's interesting because I am working on this paper with my lab and some colleagues from Columbia on how we integrate joy into AI modeling. And it's built, it's all about like these relationships and what we learn and this reflexivity that happens in these spaces, and how, like, and wanting us to reimagine how we build that into how we think about the creation of AI models. And so the paper was accepted into this AI digital ethics conference in Paris at the Sorbonne, and we're going in a couple of weeks to present it. But it really, it has come from not just the research has been one part of it, but it's also been about the kind of relationships that can happen in tech policy, in which you grow and you learn and you develop with one another, that I think can lend itself to the kind of questions that we ask when we're building AI models, how we evaluate whether an AI model is appropriate for a particular research question, all of that. So I think these relationships are central to even safe and ethical AI tools as well.
Yeah, that is my question. My next question for you is literally going to be like, how does joy, focusing on joy, allow us to build a better technological future? And you are doing that right now, actively.
Because of the joy work, we have been building a joy platform. It's called JoyNet. And we got this gift from Microsoft a couple of years ago to work with youth in New York City and Philadelphia, a youth advisory council, to first define what joy means for them and to think about what experiences do they want to have on social media platforms in which they can experience more joy. And what we heard from them is oftentimes it's hard because the algorithm thinks it knows you and is sending you, making recommendations based on things that you may not even have connections to anymore or want to see anymore. And so we wanted to give more agency to young folks, especially young Black and brown folks, who are going through stuff, who may be impacted by grief or trauma in some way. And so JoyNet is a machine learning powered platform that takes the recommendations of young folks and spits back out to them joyful content. But also we've created these features that allow them to connect on the platform. So hopefully you're finding other people like you who want to experience joy, then you can talk about joy. And hopefully it's not just an online conversation, that maybe you can connect in Philly or New York and DC and find offline moments for joy as well.
I love that you are taking those experiences of joy that so many of us have had, and the things that we were saying at the beginning of our conversation are diminishing, and doing it intentionally for our next generation. I think that is so important, right? And thinking about what our future could look like. Let me ask you this question. What has been your biggest lesson on your journey to joy?
Woo. My biggest lesson is that joy is not a luxury. That I deserve joy, that my life can be joyful and that we all deserve joy and that I have agency over how I experience joy in my life. And it's up to me.
You know what, Desmond? I think we should end it there. I think that is the perfect place for us to end this conversation. I want to thank you so much for joining us and having this conversation specifically about journeying to joy and encouraging us to make our lives be a little bit more intentional about the ways that we are thinking about and bringing joy into our space. Again, thank you for this. You've already made my life more joyful throughout the years and just by posting about this. And I hope that all of our listeners are also able to pick up on some of the many things that you have said and incorporate them in our lives.
Thank you so much.
That's it for this episode. I hope you'll send your feedback. You can write to me at justin@techpolicy.press. Thanks to Anika Collier and Avaroli and Desmond Patton. Thanks to my co-founder, Brian Jones. And thank you for listening.
Tech Policy Press.